Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here on KLBB, Club 1220. Kyle, we're here. Did you do well on Halloween?
Yeah, pretty well.
Yeah? How many neighborhoods did you hit this year?
Just the one.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
costume?
Yeah.
Costume was?
It was actually a child's Thor costume.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it did not fit very well.
Okay, and you were denied candy, but based on your height and your intimidating force, right?
No, okay. No, I wasn't. I got a little bit.
Okay, well, don't eat too much of it. You'll give you nightmares.
Yeah.
We have a great show today. A good friend of Flashback Twin Cities and TC Media now, Mike Binkley of WCCO-TV.
Hey, Tom.
How many more weeks do we have left here?
I'm down to 4 weeks left.
But who's counting, though, right?
I know. December 6th is going to be my last day, and today's the 7th.
It's a rarity in TV, and we've done the show for 3 years, and we've had a lot of people that have had great careers, short careers. You're able to actually, from Channel 5, Channel 4, you've been able to control your own career and say, this is when it's time to do something different. And that's not always common in your industry.
Yeah, it's not. Being able to go out on my own terms was important to me. And I kind of reached that point over the past year or so where I said, okay, it's time.
Those of us that aren't on TV every day, and I think have a glamorized view of what TV is. I think that people look at TV and it's, you walk in there, read some copy, you walk away. you do some really great things, do traveling. It's a job. And I think that sometimes, you get some radio sometimes too. I think that sometimes people think that you go into radio to say what's on your mind, walk away.
Yeah, you're on the air for like an hour, so you work an hour
and,
a day, right?
And they have no idea that people like Kyle are here to make sure that we're making sure that we're getting our cues right, doing our posts right. People would say, why would you give up all the fame, the glory, being on TV, doing really what a lot of people would give a lot to do?
Yeah, no, I've loved it. You know, it's been a great 34 years in this business for me. I've gotten to see a lot of interesting things, go to a lot of interesting places, meet so many interesting people. But yeah, there are some sacrifices that come with that. I mean, working weekends, like I'm going to leave and go to work and work on this sunny day after I leave here. But working weekends, working nights, working early mornings, by its nature, I mean, TV news has always kind of been built around being on the air when other people are at home and not working. So yeah, you work some extreme hours, and started this spring, I think, after coming out of the winter,
right.
You know, and you know, I'm in my late 50s now, and you look outside, and it's a beautiful sunny day, people are walking, they're biking, and you're going to work. And so you start weighing the benefits of staying in this, you know, fun, exciting, hardworking industry, or just kind of starting to enjoy life on your own, not as a reporter. You know, that's kind of what went into my decision.
And not to bring up sore wounds, but how many weddings, parties, and events have you had to sacrifice?
Well, sometimes it's been a good excuse to avoid the weddings that I didn't want to go to, but no, we've missed quite a few things. And my wife has made great sacrifices. She's had to, you know, say no to a lot of things that we could have done on weekends or at nights when I was working those early morning hours.
There's a big industry out there, which I think sometimes it's forgotten. All the servers in the world, the bartenders, the people working in hotels, gas stations, even on holidays, and you come in and you're getting your gas and you see someone taking cash, well, they're working right there.
Exactly.
And I think that in a way that people in journalism and people in the service industry have a common bond that, you know, there's never an off time. There's never a time. And I'm guessing even especially since there was a story this week about how to balance your life now that we have smartphones and you're never not working. You're never not answering a text. If you have your work email tied to your phone, any time of day or night, you reply to that while you're working.
Oh, yeah.
And to the same extent, that's, you know, that's where journalism's been for a long time. And if something happens, a storm happens, if the Twins won a World Series, which happened twice, I think, in 34 years.
Yeah, I was there for both of those.
You got to get called. You got to go out there.
Yeah, and those are fun stories. There are some more monotonous stories. There are some other demands, you know, on your time in this business. But I'm definitely looking forward to going off the grid right after I retire. I may have to unfriend some of the thousands of friends that I it's been great. But yeah, I'm looking forward to just kind of disconnecting for a while.
And you are looking forward to traveling, I assume. You've done, and as a Facebook friend of yours, I get the privilege of seeing some of your visuals.
You go, I won't unfriend you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, I'm glad that I made that cut. But you are a guy who's always out on the go. You are active. And I think one of the best things that I've seen you do in the last few years, and for what it's worth from what I say, finding Minnesota, being able to go out and really meet Minnesotans. You get this, sometimes we hear about there's not enough localism in our local news, and you're owned by a national corporation, CBS. But we have some great journalists in this town, and we have some great stories. And Minnesotans are such a great, you know, we have so many great stories here. We do these in Flashback Twin Cities all the time. Stan does them in his show. You were just telling me before the show started about this, the UFO story you did last week. Tell me a little bit about this. This is a great story. People didn't watch it.
Yeah, as I'm nearing the end of my time doing Finding Minnesota, there have been some things in my files that I've been wanting to get to for a while, and this was one. But it's a five-hour drive up to Warren, Minnesota, which is practically North Dakota-Canada border. Mm-hmm. But in 1979, and people who are watching the Fox show Fargo right now, or FX show Fargo, may have appreciate this. It's set in 1979, and there's a UFO angle to that, and they say at the start of it, this is a true story. We haven't seen this whole sheriff's deputy incident in Fargo yet, but it is considered one of the more credible UFO sightings in the United States, in part because it was a sheriff's deputy who experienced it. He was out cruising this rural highway one night. It was about 2:15 in the morning. Thought he saw maybe a low-flying airplane or something. It was a bright light just hovering above the horizon, as he explained it to the news people back then. So he starts driving toward it, and next thing he knows, he's coming to. His car is in a ditch. The windshield is cracked. The headlight is out. One of the lights on top of the squad car is cracked, and the antennas on the squad car are warped in different directions at different angles. His stopwatch stopped for 14 minutes, as did the dashboard clock, before starting back up again. So he... It's unexplained. I mean, the Center for UFO Studies came in to look at it. Law enforcement called in mechanical inspectors from the Ford Motor Company to see, like, how could this crack be made in this windshield? You know, what could have happened to the clock? All this time, it's still unexplained. And so it's one of those things that people still talk about. And it was just a fun story to go up there and tell.
And as a journalist who's supposed to be skeptical, was there a point where you thought, like, you know what, there I don't even know how to make sense of this. You probably go up there trying to think, okay, what was it, a plane? Something here just was off.
Well, you know, of course, now with the internet, we can do a lot more research. It's at our fingertips a lot more readily than it was. And you know, so many articles have been written about this, and so many studies, and they've asked all these questions. And sure, you know, there's a healthy amount of skepticism. Mm-hmm. But with Finding Minnesota, it's kind of a positive feature, and it's like it's a little more fun. You know, I'm not going to go up and break open any kind of new revelation about this incident from 1979. But it's just the fact that here's the Marshall County Museum with this exhibit, like. None other. You know, that's the one thing that draws people to the Marshall County Museum, is this squad car preserved just as it was on that night in August of 1979.
Our guest today, Mike Binkley, kind of going through some career highlights here and a little bit about what's happening in the future for you. 20 years of Channel 5. That you came to Channel 5 from Kansas City, correct?
Cincinnati. Where I was right before that. I had worked at WCPO in Cincinnati from 1981 to 1986, at a time when... Do you know who the mayor was in Cincinnati at that time?
Would that be the gentleman who has a TV show on a competing channel and does the a final thought of the day?
Jerry Springer was the mayor of Cincinnati when I was there. And Pete Rose was still playing for the Reds, going for Ty Cobb's hit record at that time. I was there for 5 years, and... It was a number one station when I got there, but there was an anchor man at a competing station who was kind of coming on strong. His name was Nick Clooney. As in George Clooney's dad. Yeah.
And he tried to run for Congress one time, too, with that name, and it worked out well. But and also, Johnny Fever was doing the mornings there, right, too?
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of a number of... it was WKRP when I was there in Cincinnati, and then when I came to Minneapolis, everybody wanted to know if I'd be working with Mary Richards and Lou Grant.
Right. Or Caden Fox, right? It was coaching the Mankato Screaming Eagles, right?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
King Channel 5, and you came to Hubbard Broadcasting. Did you think at the time Minnesota was going to be a stop at, you know, going to Chicago, Los Angeles?
No, this is, you know, Twin Cities, you know, it is known as one of the best news markets in the country. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in this business do kind of, work their way around, and, you know, sometimes this is a stop for them. But you stop when you're in a place where you know you want to be. And mm-hmm. I grew up a Vikings fan in Kansas. But, yeah, when I got here, I knew that this is where I wanted to be for the rest of my life.
You had some good teams to be a fan for when you were young.
Well, so I got here in 1986. Mm-hmm. And the Twins won the World Series in 87 and 91.
And an NFC Championship for the Vikings in 87.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know what? Good cue, actually. Hey, Kyle, I have some audio here. This is, I was looking up some video for, and this actually happened 28 years ago this weekend. We have some Mike Bingley audio.
You're watching KSTP-TV, Minnesota's News Channel 5. Live from Minnesota's News Channel, KSTP Channel 5, Mike Binkley, Karen Balloon, and Mark Stevens bring you Eyewitness News.
More than 57,000 Minnesota Vikings fans packed the Metrodome in downtown Minneapolis today, a sellout crowd. But the Vikings aren't the only team that wants to play before Minnesota's enthusiastic crowds. Good evening, everyone. Minnesota and its Metrodome have a new reputation thanks to the World Series. Sports executives are finding they like what they see in the state, the fans, the dome, and the cities. As Pat Mylan reports, Governor Perpich is taking aggressive action now to land championship events in Minnesota.
The dome. We love it.
Boy, we did back then, apparently. See, that's what's so great about your site, TC Media Now, is that you can go back. You know, it's so many of these. I mean, we know in modern times how much people did not like the dome by the time that it was coming down. But back then, it was like, wow, we just had a great moment in the dome. It was so loud. The people were so enthusiastic. The Twins had just won the World Series, but times changed.
Doesn't it feel like this is the first year you have not done a story on a stadium issue? I pulled video from the 70s, and it was the Dome Stadium before they called it the Metrodome. And there was... It sounds shocking. There's people that thought that it should not be paid for by tax dollars.
Yeah.
It went to no vote on it. It was a dramatic event. It eventually got built, and then I think we went another 20 years. We built three more stadiums.
Yeah.
I feel
Now we're talking about a soccer stadium and Target Center renovation. So, yeah, it's a never-ending thing.
So we've always had stadiums in the news here, and I think that Minnesotans have a very divided opinion on stadiums, on stadium funding. You have the very enthusiastic fans. You have the people that say... Absolutely not. No, you know, no public dollars. This has not changed from in 35 years. The dome. I think that when teams win championships, you like your stadium a lot better.
Yeah.
I've been to some stadiums in the country that are well renowned and classic. They're really terrible stadiums. I mean, they're drafty, they're cold, they're old. But
yeah.
You know what, they have some good teams in there, and they have some good fans in there.
Yeah. Have you been to Wrigley?
I have been to Wrigley.
Yeah.
That's what came to mind.
I
went to Wrigley the first time I lived there, and you expect Wrigley, this is going to be, like, well, this is a really drafty, cold stadium with
kind of uncomfortable seats.
Not a lot of thrills to it.
Yeah.
And the team actually was mediocre too, so I was trying to think, what is the draw to this?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good experience though. I mean, you go, you look at the lake, and you see a game there. It is a good thing, but the dome, we thought that was going to be the wave of the future. Get our soccer in there. We've had three soccer teams, I think, in 30 years.
Yeah. It had its moments. I remember being across the street after the '87 World Series. They had me on a building. That I'm not even sure is there anymore, but kind of overlooking the crowd. They knew how crazy everyone would be, you know, but just to see them all not only streaming out of the dome after the Twins had won the World Series, but seeing the number of people who were streaming into downtown Minneapolis to celebrate this moment that they never thought they'd see.
Welcome to Hub of Broadcasting in 86. Did you feel the history of that building when you got there? A lot of people talk about that first impression you walk in there. And if you have not been in there, it's a classic building. It's an early 50s, 60s building.
Yeah, and it's been added onto a few times, so you can get lost.
You go in the lobby, it's a green tile floor.
Yeah.
And you really get a sense you're in a Mad Men-esque era TV stage.
Yeah.
But it's a modern global broadcasting
room. Oh, yeah, one of the pioneers of the business. Yeah, and when you walk in the lobby and you see the green floor, have you noticed the line that goes through
the
lobby?
Yeah.
It's the Minneapolis and St. Paul city limits. And their slogan used to be, where Minneapolis and St. Paul meet, KSTP. So that was pretty cool. But, yes, in 1986, right before I got there, I think, was when Jason Davis had gone live from the North Pole.
Right.
But, you know, this is where this satellite technology, satellite news gathering, broadcasting technology that we take for granted now, but it was all invented in the backyard there.
Yep.
Ray Conover came up with the first satellite truck. And, it was a great time to be arriving there.
Yeah, you know, to a different generation now may not appreciate KSTP, the Hubbard family, the way that... only because of you read right now, whether it be ratings or whatnot, but Hubbard and his father did not go into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame despite having a TV station. They were launching satellites into space when no one else was.
Yeah.
And, of course, they did well for it.
Yes.
But they always took risks, and they always were innovative in their technology, color TV, TV cameras. And, again, as we said, the Kona satellite system, that was, at the time, in the mid-'80s, one of the probably the premier satellite news-gathering systems in the country.
Yeah. It was interesting. My wife and I were in Washington, D.C. A couple of years ago. We went to the museum, and it might have been the original satellite truck that I had done live shots is now in a museum.
When I saw the first VCR we had at home, and I saw it at a museum one time, and this is the one with the buttons and knobs, which started this whole challenge I have in life with, you know, doing tapes. Well, there we go. Now our technology is moving to the museums. The way technology moves rapidly right now, and it's amazing because at that point, did you think, like, well, now we're here. Now this is where news gathering's at. We have satellite. We have cable. We're watching news 24 hours a day. I think even 5 years ago, we didn't think the way social media was going to affect news the way it did. Mm-hmm. I think that the newspaper industry was probably one of the last ones to realize that this new media world is coming up. I think that the TV stations did a pretty good job integrating blogs and personal connections between reporters and the public.
Yeah.
But I look back even my site 5 years ago, and I, you know, Twitter, the Facebook integration, the Instagram, the pieces that the new markets, the new are reaching out from, mm-hmm. didn't see it. At least didn't see the way it was happening.
Yeah, and yeah, it's been revolutionary, and it's been constantly changing. You know, I left KSDP in 2006, and by the time that I had gotten back into the business in 2008 at WCCO, mm-hmm. even in that two-year period, things had just changed dramatically with the digital revolution, everybody transitioning to HD, and just the, mm-hmm. the huge expense that these stations were going through to upgrade. And, I don't know where it's heading. I'm really glad for the period that I was in TV news. I know there will always be a need for journalists and
correct.
Storytelling and, you know, professionals who, you know how to go about, you know, this business. But it's just been a good run for me. And, you know, I'll be sitting back and waiting to see where it goes from here.
You did weekend news at Channel 5. You did reporting.
And morning news at Channel 5.
And morning news at Channel 5 for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You got here in 86. Talk about it. And I'm sure you're going to be asked this by the next three people to interview in your last day, but at Channel 5, what was, if you can remember, like a couple of greatest stories you did, outside of the flood and the twins winning the World Series, what are some ones that maybe people wouldn't remember as much in their minds that you remember, though?
Well, I mean, that TV news departments had bigger budgets back then. I mean, well, maybe I'm going to get into some of the areas you were talking about, but I mean, we sent a crew of 25 people to Calgary during the 1988 Winter Olympics, and we were on the air live four times a day. I was out there covering stories on the Olympic Plaza. It wasn't the events so much, but just with so many Minnesotans competing in the 88 Winter Olympics, they wanted some of the flavor of the Olympic Village. So in addition to the sportscasters and a couple of anchors that they sent up there, they had a couple of feature reporters covering stories on the Olympic Plaza. So I was one of them, and the other one was Steve Hartman,
mm-hmm.
who is now with CBS News, right. doing pretty well on the road.
No, I remember when you guys were in Calgary, you had 5, 6, and 10, you had someone up on, you had two people anchoring
yes.
the Olympic coverage, and ABC had, in all fairness, ABC had the Olympics at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, that was going to be a huge period for us. You know, that was, I think that might have been the last time that KSTP was number one.
You guys were number one during the Olympics, that was cited, but a lot of, it's amazing that like Jason Davis, I had him on the show here one time, and I said, well, this has been a rough life for you, you've traveled everywhere, and, you know, he says much. I mean, the way news is changing now, when you can do what you can do with a phone camera now,
yes,
and you're not going to need to send trucks and people and equipment, mm-hmm. and there's some reason why that's a good thing.
Right.
I still think, though, there is a market, though, for good storytelling, a market for good photography. And luckily in this market, and I'm sure you can agree with this, we have still taken a lot of, we still have good journalists and we have good photographers here. And
oh,
we
definitely.
Care about it. And the Minnesota viewing public does not tolerate what I think that Los Angeles, other areas, for my LA podcast listeners, I apologize, but I was in LA a few days ago and watching, flipping through some of the news channels in my hotel room, and I'm not joking, you know, it's the car chase. Every time I go to LA, it's a car chase going on.
And the celebrity breakups.
Yep. And I think there was a story on some massage parlor that closed that day. And
yeah.
That's not what Minnesota news is like. That's what Twin Cities news is.
Yeah.
Once in a while, we get a good one, but...
No, this is a good TV news market that I think reflects generally the values of the people who are out there consuming the news that we deliver. You know, a lot of people may not realize how much, at least those with the ratings boxes, determine, you know, what makes it on the air.
You were on a story many years ago. You were on the sailing expedition, correct? Were you part of it? Were you covering, and I'm trying to remember this correctly, help me with my memory here, I think that... You were following the Minnesota sailboat race, and I don't know if you were with. Am I getting that incorrect? Okay. Well.
Okay. No, that's not something I did.
My mistake. You know what? On that token, let's take a break here. I'll come back and collect some better Mike Binkley thoughts here.
Yeah.
We'll come back here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLDV. Our guest is Mike Binkley of WCCO-TV.
Family-owned and operated, it's the Sail Away Cafe and Bar, proudly serving the community of Afton with love. Stop by for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It's a special place you'll love. They open daily at 8 a.m., closing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 3. Otherwise, open into the evening, offering your Sail Away favorites. Espresso, wines, and beers to complement your meal. Live music each Friday and Saturday, open mic on Thursdays. Complete information online. The Sail Away Cafe and Bar, Highway 95 in Afton, gourmet foods made with love.
At Stillwater's St. Paul Eye Clinic, we specialize in two things, lifelong vision health and celebrating our one-year anniversary in style. That's why we're giving you $100 off any complete pair of eyeglasses throughout November, only at our Norwich Avenue location. Thanks for welcoming St. Paul Eye Clinic into the Stillwater community. Join us in celebrating in style today and save.
At GEICO, we've been innovating car insurance for over 75 years with forward-thinking ideas like online quotes and the GEICO mobile app. And to prove it, we'll play one of our first radio commercials from 75 years ago.
By Jiminy, GEICO could save you money on your car insurance, which is what we'll be doing over 75 years from now. Who knows? Maybe with some sort of application that's accessible on a futuristic handheld device. We'll call them online quotes.
See? Forward-thinking.
GEICO, saving people money for over 75 years.
Join me, Tom Fierst, and me, Geriatrics, following this week's Packers post-game show for Ensure Your Success. We'll talk about principles that will help you succeed in business, sports, and in life. And we'll have a little fun, too. That's Ensure Your Success with me, Tom Fierst, and me, Geriatrics, following this week's Packers post-game show, brought to you by the Thomas Fierst Insurance Agency, your Fierst choice for insurance.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest, WCCO-TV's anchor, weekend anchor, Mike Binkley of...
Who did cover a sailing story, by the way, for KSDP. I stand corrected because my memory... In 34 years of covering, so I must have delivered. I know I delivered a box of videotapes to you with stories that I had recorded back in the 80s, and you know maybe even some in the 90s or whatever. But yeah,
and the reason I brought up was I think it was covered on morning, noon, and evening newscasts.
Yeah,
and I watched the story about five times.
Did I do a different version each time?
You know, I checked for the story and the voice of it was a little bit different. Yeah, a little bit different. Yeah, it wasn't the same one. I was asking you off air a little bit, if not your favorite story, between anchoring and reporting, because I think that a lot of, something you mentioned off air is somewhere, are anchors reporters or reporters anchors? And then there's reporting. Is it feature reporting or is it hard news reporting? And you did hard news reporting at Channel 5.
Yeah. For most of the 20 years that I was there, I was doing hard news reporting. So now a lot of people at WCCO have gotten to know me as a Finding Minnesota reporter, which is kind of light, fun feature, that sort of thing. I have one day a week on Wednesdays where I'm covering general assignment, and it's usually a hard news story. But... yeah, coming up through the ranks, I remember thinking, well, you know, it'd be fun to do some anchoring, too. But I was this, you know, like, really fresh-faced-looking kid that nobody could ever picture me. Well, a lot of people could not picture me on the anchor desk. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to be seen as an anchor. And then all these years later now, I get introduced as Mike Binkley, news anchor, because so many people see me that way. And then so many people make assumptions because I'm an anchor. Can he even report? You know, but that's how I started out in the business.
You did anchoring, you did reporting, then anchoring, then you didn't. To do anchoring, Then you did anchoring again.
Yeah.
Then you did weekends again. You did mornings again. So you've had a lot of different. I'm talking about Channel 5. You've had three different lives of anchoring at Channel 5.
Yeah. Well, and each time that I've gone from. I've only worked at four stations my entire life, but each time I'll do as much as I can at one station and then kind of work my way in the door, taking whatever job I can get at the next station. So in Topeka, Kansas, where I started, I was reporting, I was anchoring, I was shooting, I was doing radio, I was writing, I was editing, all that kind of stuff, producing. And then I got my foot in the door at Cincinnati just as a writer for this anchor who was everything. He was like the voice of God anchor in Cincinnati. The Al Schottelkotty News is what they called it because Al was completely in charge and he didn't have a lot of reporters. He read every story and so he needed writers and I got my foot in the door. And then after a while, Nick Clooney, who I was talking about, kind of knocked him off. And the rest of us who were in the newsroom got to get a little more airtime. So I worked my way up to reporter and then anchor. So as weekend anchor, got my job at KSTP and I just arrived as a reporter and kind of worked my way up again.
And I think Nick was the host of PM Magazine too, I think at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's how he got his foot in the anchoring world was was the interviewer on PM Magazine and all of a sudden was an anchor.
Because he was an actor before that, and, you know, and Rosemary Clooney's brother.
And was your background, your educational background in journalism, did you go to school wanting to be a journalist?
Yes.
And you got to do what you wanted to do.
Well, I was going to be a sportscaster because I'm a huge sports fan, and I was hoping to get a sports internship at this Topeka TV station while I was in school. But there was another kid who was going for that same sports internship that I had in class, and I knew that he was really good, and he was likely to get it, so I went for the news internship. He got the sports internship, and he went on to become this really famous sportscaster that maybe a lot of listeners will recognize, Kevin Harlan, who has worked for several networks. I think it's Fox that he's working for now. He was the voice of the Timberwolves for a while. But anyway, so I kind of got diverted into news, and I can see in news how what I ask, what I write, you know, the angle that I pursue can be different from anybody else's story. Whereas sports, a lot of times you're dealing with the same old cliches that the athletes throw out, and you're begging for interviews in the locker room from these guys who are pretty temperamental. I'm glad that I can just be a fan in the stands, you know, but my profession has been, you know, reporting and news, and it has been a great path.
So you never think, like, I would have wanted to be Mark Rosen, have that best seat in the house, as he says. And
he's had some good moments, but, you know, it's like you were describing earlier. There's so much more that goes into the business that is not glamorous and fun and exciting. And, you know, so, no, I'm happy with the path I took.
I asked Mark Rosen once when I saw him at an event many years ago, and I said, how many emails do you get on Monday morning blaming you for what the Vikings did yesterday, or blaming you how you reported a score?
Yeah. Well, now it's directly on Twitter, you know, as soon as it happens. Like, he gets bombarded with that kind of stuff.
And the reason why I bring that up is when you got in the business, this could have been 10 years ago. I'm guessing you got letters. You got letters people typed, they wrote, and you probably had a stack of them. Do you get any paper mail anymore from fans, viewers, concerned citizens?
Yeah, older people.
Right.
Yeah, they still send letters, but I have a mailbox in the newsroom, but honestly, I don't check it, but maybe two or three times a week because it's usually collecting cobwebs. But yeah, when email came along and people could reach out directly to us that way, yeah, that changed everything.
And I'm guessing it's a double-edged sword. Number one, you're communicating to the viewers more directly, but also then there's this channel of sometimes probably frustration or venting sometimes that, or maybe even sometimes, and we've had some, you know, women on the show here who, I think that sometimes people talk to women that differently than men, that people are saying things to me they wouldn't say to a man.
About appearance.
About appearance, yeah. And I'm sure anyone, you know, male or female, gets the same kind of thing. It's when you write an email, I always tell people, wait a day before you want to write an email to a politician or to, you know, to someone in the news.
Before hitting send.
Because if you're writing emotion, I'm guessing you get a lot of those emotionally written, good, bad, or otherwise emails.
Yeah, thankfully, I haven't gotten too many. And, you know, we do want to welcome feedback. We want people, you know, we don't assume that everything we do is just, you know, going over perfectly. But you can kind of tell when it's just kind of one person's, you know, opinion, if they're maybe just having a bad day, or maybe they're just kind of not a very agreeable type of person or whatever. But no, it's good to get that feedback. Thankfully I haven't had a whole lot of
it's a different integration now between the viewers and the news, because I've seen some newscasts where they'll be putting live tweets right on the news of what the viewers are expressing.
Right.
You take TV, again, 10 years ago, and that isn't that long ago, it was still that separation between the camera and the person at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there definitely has been a push, especially over the past 10 years, to be more connected with the viewers and give them the sense that they're being heard and they have a part in, you know, this whole process.
And I know that we talked before there, and I'm not asking you to profess your expertise on this, but with the number of channels that we're now, as I call it, channels, media, radio, podcasting, social media, where's TV going to land this, do you think? The way the TV, the way TV viewing is changing, it's more on-demand based.
Yes.
You see a new generation here that the Netflix, Hulu generation, major TV shows that people are talking about are not on network TV. There are some great shows on network TV, but a lot of these are coming up through the un-FCC-regulated internet channels.
Yeah, exactly. I think, a lot more is going to be on demand, I think. As far as TV news departments, it is kind of amazing to some people that we still have this model where we are on at a specific time of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And people, this is the way it was when I was coming up. I mean, we had news at 5, 6, and 10, and people planned their days around that.
Right.
They would sit in front of the TV, and that's when they could get their news. But now you can get it at any time. Mm-hmm. But finding a way to have it on demand and the little bit of advertising, like that quick 30-second ad that runs before you click on a web video or something, I mean, that only brings in so much to a news department, and it's an expensive proposition. So that's what the news departments have to find a way to be able to pay the people who produce this content. But, I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that I was in the period that I was in,
Well, because TV news is very dependent upon a good lead-in. For a newscast to have an audience, you need to have a good lead-in a lot of the times.
Yeah, and loyalty plays a big part as well.
And loyalty. And that's where I wonder. Again, I think that radio has been left for dead many times.
Right.
Over since 1925.
Mm-hmm.
But it survived. Movies were going to be left for dead once they were talking, and plus when TV came. I think TV is going to be there. TV news is going to be there. Where that plays a role and how it's going to have to reinvent itself to a certain extent in order to integrate itself with Kyle's generation here. That's what the question is, and I think that hopefully people up above are thinking about that, because
there's
a lot of people that need to work and a lot of people that need to do. And also, if we don't pay for stories, and we were joking about the newspaper going up, you need to pay for content, and people that provide content need to get paid for it. We need to eat. And
it's the same in the entertainment industry. I mean, what they're dealing with, the streaming services right now, so many artists protesting how little money they make now compared to what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But to encourage people to keep coming up through the ranks and producing the news content and the entertainment, there's got to be a way, because they're not going to do it for free.
Tell you what, when I see these Apple computer commercials from the mid-80s, Apple IIe, I never thought when I saw that someday that they were going to be the main music provider for...
Yeah.
So many people to get their songs and music from. If I had the DeLorean, it's for 30 years back in the future, to go back there and say, this Apple 2GS, this Apple company, this is how you get all your telephone, you're going to do all your photographs, your video through this.
But there were visionaries who saw that. And, there are people working on this, too, in the TV industry.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, I'm thankful that that's not my job, because I don't have that kind of vision. But, they're working on it.
When you left Channel 5 in 2006, did you think that that was the end? Did you think that you were going to, was it as final as this conversation is? Or did you leave the door open a little bit?
Oh, I definitely left the door open. I felt like after 20 years I had been there and I felt like I had done everything that I could but I thought, I might want to get back into it. I really didn't know. This is final. I really do feel like I have put in my time with TV news. It's been wonderful, and time to move on. But I had a sense, I had a 1-year non-compete, and it ended up being 2 years before somebody came along and offered me a job. But I have always enjoyed what I do, and I'm so glad that I got this second opportunity in the Twin Cities to do this.
And you did morning and weekends again at a second station in town.
Yeah, exactly. It was 4 years on the morning show, and it's been close to 3 years now on weekends.
And a great spot downtown. I mean, I work when I'm at the work in the mill during the week. I walk and watch the news across the street, see you guys do it, and I don't pound the glass too hard when you guys are doing the news.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
I want to play a story here. We were talking about this before. This is for a sports guy. This had been a great thing. You come to a town for a year and a half, and already we're in the World Series. I'm sure you thought this is how it's going to be in Minnesota. We're going to win championships all the time.
Ruth Spencer and Stan Turner.
That's our good friend Stan Turner. Okay, sounds a little screamy. We got some Mike Bigley audio.
You're so excited, your sweater's shedding.
Oh, all right, Mike Bigley is on the outside of things right now. Good luck, Mike, wherever you are. Come in, please. Right, Stan and Ruth, as you well know, a lot of the fans are still inside the dome, but just look at the way the people outside the dome are acting. They have completely taken over Chicago Avenue outside the dome. No chance of getting traffic through there. They're having to divert it away from 6th Street and down Chicago Avenue. These people have been dancing out here like they can't believe it. They've just seen it, but they still can't believe it. People high-fiving complete strangers. They've been jumping on top of taxicabs. If we can go back down there to the crowd, I'd like you to see some of the celebration going on there, just thousands of people, and there were already hundreds others waiting for them before this celebration, before the game actually ended. People who came down here with their TV sets, standing outside of Hubert's, pounding on the windows, because it was jam-packed inside there. But once this game ended, just a giant celebration, and it has not stopped since then, and it's bound to go on for a long, long time. Let's go back up to you, Santa Ruth. Thank you.
Does that night feel like it was yesterday?
Not yesterday, but it definitely doesn't feel like it was, close to 30 years?
28 years ago.
Yeah, 28 years ago. But what's interesting in listening to that is just how I'm having to shout. I'm outside over the, and the roar of the crowd still just outside the dome.
That is a Minnesota nice victory, by the way. I hope that when we win our next championship that we have a crowd, and it was excitement. But we didn't have crime. We did not have trouble. We didn't have things on fire. We didn't have cars turned over. I hope the next time we do that, we have a victory as civil as that.
I know. They were rocking a couple of cars.
Yes, it was
they were
a
trying to get through and a bus, as I recall, too. But, unlike the Gopher hockey victory or loss,
there was that.
Yeah, we've had our moments as well. But, hopefully next year when the Twins win the World Series, it'll be very civil.
Are you going to be an avid Twins fan? Once you hang it up your Channel 4 and you're free to go anywhere you want. Are you going to be a Minnesotan still? Are you going to be?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Married a Minnesotan, and our goal is to maybe spend a month away from Minnesota, maybe in February.
Are you saying you don't like to be for that?
The winter, but it's just how long it is. we definitely are here to stay.
Yeah, the last winter wasn't too bad, but the winter before that,
the polar vortex.
I think if there were some fair weather Minnesotans, I think that was the year that was going to send them away.
Well, I think that was when we definitely started hatching this kind of retirement plan. We actually flew out in January. By January of that year, we were already sick of the polar vortex, and we were sitting in an outdoor, cafe in San Diego, not far from the beach, and it was 70 degrees in January, and we thought,
this isn't so bad.
Yeah, this could work.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should make this happen.
It's okay. You can still read Star Tribune. You can check the Twins scores. You can bring Minnesota with you when
you go. Yeah, maybe we'll wait till after the Viking season is over. I mean, we're Viking season ticket holders now. Mm-hmm. We will be in the new stadium once I'm not working weekends. We're partial Twins season ticket holders. Mm-hmm. Definitely looking forward to spending more time at Target Field.
No, it's one of the best parks in America. It's unfortunate that we and by the way, I think that the Twins made some great gains considering what they had this year, and I think that there's a lot of optimism for the Twins.
Paul Molitor has brought them a long way.
And the Vikings with that new stadium, it's going to be nice to watch a game in that stadium.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we paid for our seat licenses already, so we're going to be there.
And someone who works and you don't live far from downtown, correct?
We are in downtown.
Didn't want to give that away, but you live downtown. I've seen there many times, but seen the progression of the stadium, and I work downtown too. It's been great to be able to see that over the course of the last few months.
My initial retirement plan was going to be coinciding with the Viking Stadium opening.
Right.
It was going to be July of 2016. And so each day, walking, I live and work in downtown Minneapolis. So each day, walking through the skyways, I'd have a few vantage points of the stadium going up, and I could kind of gauge how much closer to retirement I was. But then we ultimately decided to move it up and just make it December of this year.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring up a story topic, and this is a little bit more somber, and I will come back to something more fun. But Jacob Wetterling has been on the news again. This is a story you covered at Channel 5.
Yeah.
It's a story that's been covered a lot this week.
Yeah.
It's just one of those Minnesota stories. And being not too far off from Jacob's age, I don't give my age away too often, but for the purpose of this conversation, that really hit close to home as you know, in the 80s, we had were inundated a lot with kidnapping PSAs and kidnapping safety. And you know, you're always cautious of, you know, go with, you know, be with someone, tell someone where you're going. This was after the Adam Walsh event of the early 80s. Yeah. And to be about Jacob Edling's age and then learn about this and then nothing. I mean, there was just no clue. Patty Wetterling, how can people, you know, it's, you see her year after year pleading for anything.
Yeah, still doing it. Yeah, a lot of people kind of refer to that as the moment that Minnesota lost its innocence, mm-hmm. you know, because here we maybe thought that we were a little more protected up here in the Northland. But yeah, so many of us, I mean, for so long, we're covering the searches, we're covering, you know, any little tidbit in the investigation, but that really started drying up, and Patty was always there, you know, willing to talk, and, you know, to keep the story alive, always welcoming us with hugs and cookies and things like that. Yeah, I think, you know, those of us who have been here through all of that, we're so hopeful that, you know, that there will be a resolution. You know, it may not be the one that mm-hmm. Patty and Jerry are hoping for, but, you know, just to have the answers, ultimately.
And someone knows something. I mean, someone knows something, mm-hmm. and that's the part that's so, you know, heartbreaking. This is, you got to have some kind of closure to all this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's what the investigators are saying. There may be just a tiny piece of information that somebody's been mm-hmm. holding on to for all these years, mm-hmm. you know, that this may be the moment now that they can come forward and saying, well, you know what, there was this one thing.
There's been so many times over the years where the story comes back up, and they did some digging last year. They've been back there, and it's, unfortunately, it's always been, it kind of comes up, and then it dies again. And yeah. I remember back in the 90s, they interviewed Patty Wetterling, and unfortunately, it was a back page story at that point. It mm-hmm. was, and, you know, having met Patty Wetterling before, and just being part of this whole, you know, being a young person when this happened to, it sure be, I can't think of the word good, but it'd be nice to be able to close this, be able to understand
absolutely.
What happened.
Yeah, I think all of us are pulling for that. I mean, it could happen.
Caroline Lowe, who a mutual friend of ours, is coming back to do some stories for Carol Levin. Mm-hmm. She announced this week, so it'll be good to have Caroline Lowe, a very experienced crime reporter and someone who's been very closely involved with this investigation for 25 years. We'll
yeah.
be coming back.
She, you know, she was the ultimate crime reporter when she was working for us at WCCO, and she left to go out to California for a while, and she got into news management, but she kind of always kept mm-hmm. her, you know, obviously her thoughts, but also, you know, she put the pictures of these unsolved crime victims, victims of unsolved crimes, on her desk,
mm-hmm.
you know, constantly keeping her eye out for any kind of new development.
Yeah, she's still focusing on the Jody, who's it?
Who's in Truth?
Yeah, Who's in Truth. It's amazing, 20 years since that happened,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Mason City.
So you're wrapping it up here in a few weeks. You were telling me that your co-anchors now think that you've gotten really edgy now the last few weeks.
Well,
you're just letting loose. I think the tie is loosening up now. You're going to feet in the desk, right?
Oh, yeah. I might wear jeans maybe one of these weeks. I don't know. No, I think they're just kind of making fun of how straight-laced I am.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anything
we call
that,
it professional. In the
oh,
bed,
well,
yeah,
I appreciate
right,
that. No, I think they're looking for any sign that I might be just
right.
just cashing it in. But, no, I'm not going to do that.
It's, you know, it's been great to have you on, you know, seeing you promote these stories over the years. If you want to see Mike Binkley, you can go to tcmedianow.com. You can relive Mike's greatest days, and I'm sure there'll be a few yet to come in the next few weeks, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I so admire the website that you have, TC Media Now, that you're collecting all these memories, that you have a respect for us aging news people and and what we had.
We're all aging.
Yeah, how we did what we had, you know, how we worked with what we had, you know, way back then. But yeah, I've delivered a few boxes to your. I got to go into the inner sanctum where you collect all these videotapes and did a story, Finding Minnesota story on TC Media Now. That was a lot of fun.
You know, there's not many people that can say they went to Inner Sanctum or if I wanted to, but, you know, it's amazing. Since you were on the show, my home last time, that story actually was able to, people were actually emailing me the next day that aired and had more tapes. And now I'm glad you guys came. I actually had the place pretty well cleaned up when you guys came there. Now it's back to, if you don't see me coming to work next Saturday, I'll be downstairs with the tapes on me with my, you know, hand raised trying to get out of it. It's great, and I want to, you know, be able to do what maybe other people in town aren't doing, is people preserve this history and culture through video. If you want to, and by the way, when you guys are in San Diego for a month and you want to, you know, we miss TV news, we want to go back to 1988 and view that again.
TC Media Now.
any last thoughts? I mean, I know you've probably gotten a lot of comments from viewers. Anything you want to, you know, be a lot of people here in Stillwater and St. Paul that are listening. Anything you want to say to them? You know, they're going to feel betrayed because people in this market feel that people on the news are part of their family. And they see you every morning or every weekend. You're going to be gone, and they're not going to be able to tweet you or they're not going to be able to call the station. What do you have for them?
Well, I mean, it's been nice having this great connection, especially for the past 7 years, you know, being able to do the Finding Minnesota reports and go around the state. I mean, I love the state. I love the people. Now it's just going to be a matter of, you know, my wife and I getting to enjoy these without the camera, mm-hmm. you know, and just kind of enjoy everything that we have. It's, you know, it's been wonderful. It's, you know, I appreciate that. That some people are saying, no, you're way too young, you know, but I really feel like the time has come, and I'm just going to enjoy my retirement, mostly in Minnesota.
Let's take a second break. We'll come back with some final thoughts from Mike Binkley at WCCO-TV here on KLBB.
At Stillwater St. Paul Eye Clinic, we specialize in two things, lifelong vision health and celebrating our one-year anniversary in style. That's why we're giving you $100 off any complete pair of eyeglasses throughout November, only at our Norwich Avenue location. Thanks for welcoming St. Paul Eye Clinic into the Stillwater community. Join us in celebrating in style today and save.
We aren't dealing with $4 a gallon gas prices these days, but that doesn't mean fuel economy isn't important. See River Valley Ford in Baldwin today and test drive any of our fuel-efficient cars. The Fiesta and Focus boast nearly 40 MPGs. The midsize Fusion has sporty good looks and impressive mileage and performance. And imagine getting nearly 500 miles on a single tank of gas in a full-size car. Stop imagining and check out the Ford Taurus. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and family choose River Valley Ford of Baldwin.
Club 1220 KLBB presents the Community Calendar. A fundraiser for the Free Clinic of Pierce and St. Croix Counties is being held today at Meyer Middle School in River Falls. There will be a soup supper and a variety show featuring comedian Mary Mack. New Richmond High School presents the musical Cinderella tonight at 7 and Sunday at 3 at the New Richmond High School Auditorium. The Lake Elmo Park Reserve is closed this weekend for deer management hunting. All other parks in Washington County are open. A Veterans Career Workshop will be held on Tuesday at the Washington County Government Center in Stillwater. It's from 8 until noon. Fall yoga classes continue on Monday at the Lake Elmo Park Reserve Nordic Center. Pre-registration is required. Contact Washington County Parks. The Friday Memorial Library in New Richmond is presenting a showing of the movie The Homefront on Monday at 1 p.m. And that's the community calendar.
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here with WCCO-TV's Mike Binkley. Okay, so we were just talking a little bit before during the break. What is the latest you had to do a newscast? So you're going to do the 10 o'clock news tonight, but it's going to be late tonight.
I'm thinking it's going to be late because we have the big SEC matchup tonight. And, you know, it's scheduled to go from 7 to 10, but I think it's probably going to be more like 11. But that would not be a record if we went on at 11 o'clock. We've had a Saturday night. You know, Saturday nights at 10, we go for an hour. Mm-hmm. So there was one where we had an SEC game that went into overtime, I think a couple of overtimes, and we started at 11:35. So that means we go to 12:35. And so some of the scripts that were written to say tonight or last night, you know, like on the fly, we're having to change them to last night or two nights ago. Yeah, so it's crazy.
The majority of our lives, there's been 3.5 hours of news and then morning news. And you did morning news for an hour. Morning news now is like 2.5 hours now.
Right, I remember when they wanted to expand it to an hour and a half. I was like, really?
Really? And then you did 40. You were at Channel 5, and you did 45 for an hour, too.
So that ended up being 4.5 hours.
That's a lot of live TV.
Yeah, so at WCCO, you know, it's just 2.5 hours. It was 2.5 hours in the morning, and then you would get a break and start working on the noon show. But that in itself made for a long day. If you're getting in at 3 a.m., and then you're not getting off the air until 12:30.
Are the nerves exhausted after 4 hours? I mean, I know you're a pro, but, even for me, for doing an hour of live radio, I still get nervous before I go on the air. I'm sure I could do 4 hours.
Oh, I don't want to try and make it seem like it's, you know, mentally exhausting or anything. But there is a bit of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, trying to be on for all that time, especially if you haven't gotten a lot of sleep the night before, you know, at those early morning hours. But
and you have to add, I mean, you have to ad lib. You have to occasionally that prompter goes down for a second, and you have to.
Now what? What do I? I don't have the words anymore.
And luckily, for the majority of our careers, the YouTube was not there to capture every single error. Do you remember Do you remember an error you ever did on air that you're glad is not captured somewhere?
Well, there was a time where I was going on very little sleep in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the 11 o'clock news, and I think we might have even gotten pushed back late or something. But yeah, I was not feeling well. My co-anchor called in sick, and I'm out there all by myself. And yeah, I had a mini panic attack on the air. And I'm so glad that YouTube was not invented then, because yeah, that would still be under Google searches, I think, in my name.
Mike Binkley, WCCO TV. Thank you for being a great friend of TC Media Now. And
yeah, I kept it together during this interview.
I was expecting a lot more. A lot more edge from you.
Sweating.
A lot more sweat.
Oh.
I have an announcement to make, actually.
Yeah.
Again, first of all, best wishes to you and your well-deserved retirement. Announcement. This is after a long thought decision here on my part. We are down to our last two Flashback Twin Cities shows. This is a new announcement. Working at TC Media Now as a nonprofit, as I shamelessly plug every week here, there's a lot of work needs to be done in preserving film, video, and otherwise, and I'll be devoting my time to doing that, and also I'll be back here doing special events. I'll still be appearing on shows as needed, and I'll still be doing whatever I can do to help my friends here at KLBB, but we are, last Saturday, we were the last Flashback Twin Cities, at least regular Flashback Twin Cities. I may come back as needed, but we're down to the last 2 weeks. So I'm, much like yourself, I will be doing some new challenges.
Yeah, well, you've done a great service, not only with your website, certainly with this radio show as well. I know your listeners have really appreciated it, and those of us in the industry really appreciate that, you know, that you respect what we've done.
I hope it's mutual, and I hope that, again, people will, they can listen to every past show on iTunes. They can listen to this Mike Binkley interview anytime they want to. I hope you guys listen to it on your way to, on your way
yeah.
to the door. But we will be back next Saturday. We actually have Nancy Nelson, who is a queen of infomercials, and she was also a local news anchor and talk show host here for many years, and also was married to WCCO TV's Bill Carlson. We'll have her on next Saturday for the last Flashback Twin Cities. Until then, we will be back next Saturday. It's been great. More to come, and have a great week.
Good luck, Tom.
Thank you.